Since the show began almost 2 years ago, A Change of Tune has highlighted some of the best up-and-coming artists out of these West Virginia hills, with podcasty chats ranging from Tyler Childers to Ona, Bud Carroll to Coyotes and Boxes, and beyond. But those interviews have been a bit infrequent. And since West Virginia Day was just this past month, and with the Change of Tune's second birthday just around the corner, we thought we'd do something special. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews that range from Morgantown alt rockers and Parkersburg singer-songwriters to West Virginia music venues and regional artist management and beyond, all of which contribute to the state's wild and wonderful music scene. And today we are chatting with Tim Browning, a Logan County singer-songwriter who's been playing in the area for about 20 years. As you can probably guess, he has a number of stories to tell. So, Tim Browning, thanks for stopping by Charleston to chat about your music and, you know, what it's like living in West Virginia.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. So do you want to go ahead and fully introduce yourself and what you do for a living?
Sure. My name's Tim Browning, singer-songwriter, been kicking around these hills for quite some time, and currently, a little stint in the military. I am a surgical ICU nurse at Cabell Huntington Hospital and a single dad. Those are my hats that I wear.
Those are pretty hefty hats.
They can be.
Yeah.
There's a lot of situations where they compete.
Which one were you first of the three hats?
Of the three hats, the first one was the singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Just turned 36 2 weeks ago, so I've been doing it for at least 20 years. To some avail here and there. Straight out of high school, I graduated in 1998, so straight out of high school, I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and tried my hand at kicking around that scene, and found out very quickly that I was not ready. So there was a stint where I came home and licked some wounds and just went back at it. And I think for me personally, the time that I spent away in the military, you know, seeing the world, that's where most of what I sing about and where the songs come from in my heart, that's where that kind of was born from. I think until I left and I was out there and really accrued a different perspective and life experience, that after that, I finally had something worth saying.
Where are you from originally? Are you from Barbersville, from Cabell County?
I am originally from Logan County.
Okay.
Right down the road from Mr. Jeff Ellis. And strangely enough, Jeff and I, we have older brothers that went to school together, played basketball together. We were only a year apart and just a few miles apart from Chapmanville and Logan, but we never, ever sat down and had a conversation until 2008 in what is now Black Sheep, but was I think it was Calamity Cafe. What was it at the time? I believe back in 2008. But we were both going to school on the Marshall campus and sat down, and we had an amazing conversation. And ever since then, he has been a dear friend and also a kind of an inspiration and at times a mentor as a songwriter.
So how did you get started in music about 20 years ago?
When I was a kid, my parents both played Southern gospel music in church. Both were guitar players. That's how they met. And so music has always had a strong influence in my life. And when I was about 8, I got my first bass guitar, and I sat on a stool behind them and plucked away at the bass while they were singing. So it's kind of funny to call it touring, but we went all over the region playing music. And so that's where I got my start. And then my cousin gave me an old electric harmony guitar, and I had no amplifier, so I had to wait till it was late at night and everybody was asleep, and started learning how to play guitar. So that's where everything started. And from there on out, I never, you know, you watch a lot of acts and a lot of bands and a lot of places do cover tunes, and they talk about their inspirations, and I just never was good at that. I'm never comfortable, maybe intimidated by playing other people's songs. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll just try to write my own. And that was that.
Now, usually the stories I've been hearing about West Virginia music is that it is hard to start out in West Virginia with original tunes, that they do go to covers because, you know, they're more recognizable. People, you know, can come out to the show because they know what to expect. But you didn't do that then.
No, and still to this day, with the band that I'm currently playing with, they egg me on and they give me a hard time because I still, to this day, am not comfortable with playing other people's music. And I don't know if it's just when I sing other people's tunes, I can't find kind of like the source material inside to really project it and to own it as my own. I don't know if that's it. I think that may be the best way I could describe it. But I've always felt that if I get the opportunity to get in front of an audience, I'm there, you're listening, I'm going to tell as many of my stories as I can. Because I'm never going to get good at telling my own stories unless I get out there and do it. And so it's been a long road. It's been a really long road because I think West Virginia has a very odd history. We are so desensitized to the music that we grew up around because it's so readily available. Everybody's grandpa, you know, can pick a banjo on a back porch. Their grandmother led the hymns in church. There's so much music here that I think sometimes that we don't recognize how much of a treasure trove of talent and creativity is here because West Virginia has kind of unfortunately fallen at the back of the line, and we're always wanting to be a part of what everybody else does, because who doesn't? That's just our culture that we live in. That's America. Everybody wants to feel cool, feel like they're, you know, participating. But I think sometimes we miss the boat when it comes to our identity here. I think that we need to embrace it a little bit more than we have in the past, and especially with new generations coming up. And that's why I love, you know, independent music. I'm very out of touch a lot of times with what's going on because a lot of that has to do with the fact that I was gone in the military for so long and I got 8 years behind on what was happening with being overseas, being, you know, in Iraq and different things like that. So when I came back, there was like all this stuff going on that I had no concept of. And still, I'll dig up albums from 6, 7 years ago and it's the first time listening for me. And so, like bands like that are going on right now, like a lot of the regional acts that we have and that, you know, you've spoken with, and it's awesome that they're getting, you know, the exposure on Mountain Stage, like Tyler, like Ona, you know, like I said, you know, before Jeff, these are the guys that I listen to. These are the guys that I aspire to do what they're doing because there's so much heart in it. There's so much originality and it's, they sing about what goes on in my life. So it may be an age thing, but for me, that's who's getting my money. That's who's getting who's getting my attention.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, if that fuels the local economy when you do that, I mean, it just kind of it builds off of itself when you support something local. So right. that's a good endeavor.
So that's kind of where I'm at currently.
So what did you listen to when you were younger? Were they mostly West Virginia artists? Were they out of state artists?
You know, a lot of my young life was spent just being around family, and there were a lot of bluegrass pickers, a lot of harmony singers, you know, picking out parts and just being around that. That's how I got a lot of my influence. But then as I started to grow, mine was a very odd kind of musical background. My old man, he wasn't into the Beatles. He didn't listen to Bob Dylan. A lot of the influences I got musically were, you know, the Doobie Brothers, the Eagles, you know, these big ensemble bands that were doing, you know, a different type of thing. And because my parents were so steeped in the church, I didn't get to listen to anything post 1979. All my influence came before that. And it's so weird and strange to say that, you know, these big, you know, icons like Bob Dylan and the Beatles got left out. But I think that if you listen to the things that I write about and what I do, that it's very noticeable because it doesn't come from, you know, that era or those types of things. I obviously discovered them as I got older. But a lot of that just kind of happened over time. And for me personally, there's nobody more influential, the top guy on the pyramid for me will always be Hank Williams Sr. He, to this day, is, you know, my guy. And that came a lot from my grandparents. They were diehard, you know, Opry watchers. And when they passed, you know, I kind of inherited all these old 45 singles that were nothing but, you know, Grand Hall, you know, Opry acts. So Johnny Cash, obviously big influence on me, but nobody more than Hank Williams Sr. There was just something in the things that he sang about and what he did that was just so heartbreakingly raw and relevant and urgent that for always will always be, you know, my biggest influence.
By being surrounded by folks that loved the Grand Ole Opry, which is based in Nashville, mm-hmm. was that one of the reasons why you chose to move to Nashville?
I think maybe subconsciously it was. Because strangely enough, I don't really sing country music.
No, you don't.
It has it, but I think it has a lot of the same ingredients. A lot of roughneck, back alley thoughts and ideas with just blue collar, just dealing with life with the only tools that you have. And I think a lot of times that's what country music is. You know, those being in those hills, in those hollers, you know, and taking life as it comes, trying to get up out of that hole that you feel like you were kind of born in. But at the same time, the current string of tunes that I've been doing with my band, the Widowmakers, I always describe our music as crimes of passion. That's kind of where we come from. But with Nashville, it seemed just as mystical and just as far away as Hollywood. You know, as a kid, we didn't travel much outside of, you know, our little stomping ground. Mm-hmm. So I never got on a plane. I never got on a bus until I was 23 years old. So that was a really confined space of bouncing around. But at 18, I loaded up my little piece of crap car, and I drove to Nashville. And, you know, we all had. You know, at that point, you have these grandiose ideas of what you're going to be. And I think that's where that love of local and that love of independent, because you walk in and you may open up for a local group and they're amazing. And everything that they are doing is just as quality and felt just as important as what you heard on the radio. And a lot of times, the acts that you see were bits and pieces of guys that and gals that were on the radio, but were still doing those local acts and those small things because that's still where their heart was. And the guy that's parking your car or the gal that's grabbing your coffee is the most amazing songwriter or the most brilliant singer that you'll never, ever hear. And I was just kind of captured by that. And I don't think I ever, fell out of love with it.
What made you move back to West Virginia from Nashville?
A lot of that was just circumstance. I spent some time in Nashville, and my parents, unfortunately, went a route that, as so many folks do these days, and they split up. I had a younger brother back here, and, you know, family coming back and trying to do my part. And I did for a time, and I kind of got to the point where I was like, you know what, I need to go. I need to see things that I've read about. I'm tired of living vicariously. And did as so many young men and women do, and hopped in and went into military and spent almost a decade gone out and about, seeing the world, different places. And, you know, I've been back to Nashville once since then. And I don't know. It's different. It's so much more crowded. It's so much... It has become like, you know, the West Coast.
It's become like Las Vegas of the South.
It's almost a caricature of mm-hmm. itself. When I think the last album that I like actually went through the line notes and really checked to see out who was on it was one of Alice Cooper's albums, and Vince Gill played lead on that album, and I was just like, "What is this? What is this I'm holding in my hands?"
That's pretty cool.
You know, it was just such an odd, you know, combination of things that are going on down there, and so I romance about my old days.
Well, at Nashville, I feel like it could be like a heartbreaker, could be a soul crusher of sorts. But it seems like you survived that, right?
Yeah, I survived it. I think, fortunately, I was young and naive enough to just take those punches. And I was so blown away by just being there and the history of it and seeing the places that I'd only, you know, seen on TV. So I was just happy to be a part of it, getting out there. I think that one of the coolest experiences, forgive me, I can't remember his last name, but his first name is Matt. He played bass for Sixpence None the Richer, and they had the song Kiss Me that they had done. And I got to hang out with him and play a coffee house gig, and like my mind was just blown. I'm like, I'm listening to this on the radio on the way here, and then I walk in, and here's this guy. And, you know, we're sharing the same space. We're sharing the same audience. And for that moment in time, it felt like that was 18 years old on a level playing field with someone that they just never thought that you would share space with. So I'm just always thrilled to get on stage and share.
Now that's the song Kiss Me, like Kiss Me.
Yeah.
Na, 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 na. Okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure. I was thinking for a second, like, that can't be the right song.
Yeah,
no, so you enlisted in the military. Was it hard trying to play music or keep up with music when you were overseas?
A lot of inspiration. I think that it was hard finding a chance to perform, but it was not hard to write.
Mm-hmm.
I think that provided me with the most time ever of reflection. And I've said it before, the further I got away from home, the more I fell in love with home and where I was from, and kind of came to terms as a young man with it's okay where I'm from. It's okay to be from where I'm from. And just really accepted a lot of things about myself, which has always been kind of my hardest lot in life, is really just accepting things as they come sometimes. And so I started to get away from, you know, the grungy, you know, kind of, I don't know, abstract ideas that were happening in a lot of the music that, you know, you listen to as a teenager, and really came at home with being very blunt, very matter of fact, and very honest with who I was and what I was writing about, and got away from trying to write what I thought people wanted to hear.
I guess that's you kind of mentioned it earlier, but I didn't really think about it. Like, you were removed from everything, mm-hmm. everything that would be mainstream or, you know, that popular. And that must have been just a clean slate for you to think about new music and just how to approach yourself.
Well, the one thing is that when you come back in and you're kind of reintegrated, is that you get to pick. You know, when you're young and you're growing up and you're part of the culture and society that you're in, everything's flying at you and you're just trying to take it all in. And coming back in, you realize that there's no possible way that I can get to everything. So what am I going to spend my time getting into? What am I going to spend my time listening to? And so it was sobering. And I really had to be selective. And so just hopping back into things, of course, I've always been drawn to singers, you know, songwriters, but it really changed the ball game. And what I started doing in a lot of ways, even with books that I read and movies that I watched, anything that had to do with anything, I found myself actually going further back than when I left.
Hmm.
And I was like, it's my decision now. I get to decide what influences me. Which it was a very interesting way of doing things. And what I found out was that rawness, that blunt tool, instead of kind of the finesse, seemed to be the thing that I was most comfortable with. You know, I am not the most technical musician. I'm not the most, I'll never be the most smart songwriter. But what I found out was just cutting through to the meatiest piece of honesty that I could find was the best way for me to do things, and to just kind of bear all and not try to be cryptic about what I was trying to say.
So after you came back to the U.S., did you create a new band, or did you start touring immediately?
Yet again, a lot of the circumstances that I found myself in kind of led me down different roads to where I am now. But I came back, was living in Huntington, was going to Marshall, like I said, met Jeff, and played some tunes for him. Hadn't been in this area in a long time. I had been mildly involved in the music scene here back in the early 2000s and was actually a bass player for a metal band, of all things.
Which metal band?
Oh, my God. It was called Born for Eternity.
Aww.
And,
I could just imagine the script for that.
Yeah, exactly. It was an interesting time in my life. But it was really my first foray into being on a team. So coming back in to the fold, I knew that I had been gone for so long, and I had just this mass amount of tunes that I had written, but they didn't fit the old way that I used to do things. They were more complex. They needed more to them. So I had a basic skeleton of a lot of tunes, but I had played them live. I've lived a few places, Colorado, and I'd played solo, and they just weren't working as the solo singer-songwriter guy. They just needed something else. So I actually ended up going to nursing school back home in Logan County, and got reacquainted with some guys there who, three of them are in a metal band called Let the Guilty Hang, which have played, you know, a lot regionally. And I was like, guys, we're here. I've got these tunes, you know. And I gave him my babies and to see what we could do. And we ended up picking up an amazing guy named Jordan McCown that's in a band called Lost Swimmer from Kentucky. And we just hit it. And it was kind of magic. It's like I said before, it's very raw. It's very blunt. It's very rock and roll. It forced me to be a front man, which I've never been. So it was a lot. It was a big learning experience. I mean, just being on stage, being comfortable with what was going on. I had to change my style really of singing to raise to the level of intensity that, you know, was going on. So it's been it was very uncomfortable at first, but it really pushed me, and I feel like, you know, I've come a long way.
Now, the name of that band you're referring to is Tim Browning and the Widowmakers. Where did that name come about, beyond, you know, your name actually being a part of that name?
At the beginning, it was a trio, just me, a guitarist, and a bass player. And the bass player is no longer in the band, but he still is part of the spirit of things, came to the studio with us when we went into the studio with Bud. His name's Ryan Herndon. And those guys, they just picked their own name. I was like, I'm Tim Browning. You guys pick who you are. And they came up with the Widowmakers, and it just seemed to fit, you know, the style of what we were doing. And I've always been kind of in love and kind of infatuated with the Old West brand of justice and spaghetti Western style of things. And it just seemed to be so applicable. Really a big fan of the scores from those films by Ennio Morricone. And I'm a fan of a band called Murder by Death, and who is also really influenced by those types of things. So I fell in love with just that, let's take it out back and solve this problem kind of attitude about things. And that really plays out. Because it's not PC. That's not how we do things these days. You know, it's not that part of our culture anymore. And sometimes I feel like it needs to be, because I think sometimes we need to be weighed and found wanting so we can find our place in the world.
We'll take a good look around. hear that sad lonesome sound. And things stay the same, you'll never change.
You've mentioned working with Bud Carroll on mm-hmm. the new record, which I assume the new record is with Tim Browning and the Widowmakers.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us a little bit more about the record. What's the title of it, and how did it come to be?
The working title for the album, whether it actually receives it or not, has always been Bad Intentions. Mm. And the whole concept, yet again, leads back to that idea. I went to the desert, and that imagery that we were talking about in the films that I love, it was kind of there. You know, you're out there. It's you against the elements. It's you against an enemy. And reflecting once I came back stateside, I just couldn't get rid of the thought, you know, of the saying that the road to hell leads. I mean, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You know, but where does the road leave that is paved with bad intentions? What if you know from the beginning that you're setting out to do something that you're not necessarily proud of, but something that is just a part of you that you have to get out? And so a lot of these songs, like I said before, they revolve around the concept of crimes of passion. What drives us? What are the dark parts of us that we would be more free kind of if we kind of fessed up and just owned them? In a lot of ways, accepting those, it'll make us better people because we'll be able to get rid of them. And so I've kicked that idea around for a long time, and what I found more and more is the more I wrote, dealing with, you know, my life and my my experiences, led to this group of songs that they really don't cut you any slack. They really just kind of come out, and like I said, they kind of hit you in the face, and you either like them or you don't like them, but I think that they're relevant. And so that led to working with these guys, which is a completely different brand of rock and roll that I've ever been part of.
You mean these guys
as in
your bandmates?
Widowmakers, yeah. I'll go ahead and name the roster if that's cool.
That's okay.
I got Bevar on guitar, Jordan on guitar. Those are the guys with the 1-2 punch. They really are, man, they have such an amazing ability and sound. They're really reminiscent of just like, acts like Thin Lizzy is what I say a lot. I say a lot. The byline a lot of times is we're Johnny Cash meets Thin Lizzy, because you got the singer-songwriter that's kind of got this brooding country, take no prisoners kind of attitude.
You.
Exactly. And then you've got these guys that just inhabit the stratosphere with these amazing things that they can do on the guitar that I would never be able to in 1,000 years. And they play these soaring, amazing, you know, harmonic guitar solos. And it just, the amount of sound, it's just ferocious. And of course, Dan plays drums, and rounding it out on the bass is Adam. And it's an amazing experience.
And how did you get connected with Bud Carroll for producing this record?
Everybody knows Bud Carroll, it's either
true.
By name and influence.
Yeah.
But to be completely honest, until this year, Bud and I had known of each other, but we never sat down and alone and ever had a conversation. We really never had any type of strong relationship. And started asking the guys that I trust, guys like Travis Egner from the Horse Traders, and of course Jeff. And I was like, you know, you guys have heard us. We've played gigs together. Who's the right person for the job? And Trackside and Bud, American Miner, AC30, Ian Thornton, all these guys that have been around for such a long time in this scene. Everybody said that Bud was the man for the job, and I trusted them, and then approached Bud, and we got in the studio, and there was no mistaking, he was the right man for the job. And in the time that I've spent with him this year, I have grown to call him, you know, a dear friend. He's been an amazing person to be around. He's one of the most kind, and giving individuals. And I think that's why so many people carry that banner and love to claim him as a friend, is because he really is just he knows what he's doing. Oh, forgive me, forget Bradley Jenkins.
Oh yeah, from Ona. Yeah.
Long conversations with him, and asking about their experience with Bud, and just nobody had anything bad to say. And especially when you come to crotchety, whiny musicians, sometimes we have a lot to complain about. And when you find a diamond, you kind of just buy it. You cash in, and it has been nothing but pleasurable. And he took a bunch of roughnecks from Logan and shined us up and got us in line. And I'm so proud of what we've been able to do.
No, we're lucky to have Bud. I think he's one of those little gems of the valley that he's able to just make, you know, the coal into diamond or mm-hmm. whatever analogy you want to put there. So he's one of the assets we have. What are the other things that you think are building up the scene that you've worked with over the years?
I think really the cross-pollination of artists, and sometimes you are all you got. And I think that there has been a very kindred spirit of support from everyone leaning on each other. I can't remember what weekend it was, but it's very recent. The Horse Traders and Ona went out to 35th Star out in Fayetteville. And I hopped in and rode in the van down. And wow, here we were in Fayetteville, and everybody I knew was there. From Huntington, from Charleston. And it was amazing to see a room full of people in yet another town. Obviously, there were, you know, locals, and there were people there out to watch the show and out and support those guys. But just that everybody has been so supportive in putting gas in the car and putting miles on their vehicle to go out and to support. I thought that was it really opened my eyes to just how special the scene currently is. And I mean, just guys like Tyler, you know, that
Tyler Childers, yeah.
That you listen to them and you wonder where they came from. You wonder, how did we get blessed to have them here? And I know sometimes it has to get tiring being on the forefront of the scene and everybody wanting a piece. And you know, hey, I know Tyler and this and that or whatever. Tyler came down and played a show in Logan with us at a coffee shop. And to this day, it's still my favorite performance ever that he's done. Because it's just him on the stool. And it was the first time that I'd really gotten to hear the storyteller side. The guy who really just took the time in between songs to just tell us where they came from. And that's always, as a writer, been something that I've always been drawn to. But just to hear this young man talk about this well of a life experience at such a young age, it really just validated and lended such a credibility to what it is that he sings about. Because a lot of people call him an old soul.
Mm-hmm.
But he's put the miles on that soul, and he was just so incredible to see him in that performance. And we got to, like, yet again, just an opportunity to share the stage with him. And so it's been great to watch everybody kind of pull together and support each other.
At the start of the interview, you mentioned you had three hats. You had the musician hat.
Yes.
You had the nurse hat. And you also have the father hat.
Yes.
Can you talk about that third hat a little bit?
I can talk about that all day.
Your eyes just like glowed for a second thinking about your children.
Exactly. I have two daughters. One that actually is turning 7 today. Name is Isabella Reese.
Happy birthday, Isabella.
And I have a 4-year-old who is a force of nature named Ava Noel. And I could really go on all day, but suffice it to say that they are the most important people that I've ever been blessed to get to know. It's really I'm really awestruck at being able to spend the time that I get to spend with them. Unfortunately, their mom and I split ways a couple years back, and that's played out, obviously, in our lives. But I will say that the one thing that it has done is has opened up my world to be a better dad. It's stretched me. It's made me a better man in general. But I love it. It's the coolest thing ever. I really don't know how people shake their head in frustration at being a parent. Maybe I just lucked out and got two good kids.
Lucked out twice, yeah. Right, yeah.
But I don't think there's anything better that I could invest in. They come to gigs with me. I almost brought Izzy with me today.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
they both love music. My youngest, my four-year-old, she is a blues singer. When she gets in trouble and time out, she'll grab my guitar. And one of my favorite memories of her is she kept pushing on a screen door. And I was like, you better stop. She's like, but Daddy, I want to go outside. And she had nothing but underwear on, and it's way too cold outside. And I was like, no. And she goes, she picks up my guitar. She lays it across her lap. It's, it was at this point 10 times bigger than her. And she just starts raking her fingers across the strings. And she goes, Daddy told me no. Daddy told me no. And she says she's going to be a drummer. And I believe it. She has got the 100% rock and roll face down when she's in the car. When we're listening to some music, she is just from the toes to the top of her head, she's 100% rock and roll. And Izzy is a little bit more pop queen diva, but she wants to be a violin player. So,
oh, cool.
I'm hoping between the two of them, I can just, as I get older, and kind of just, ride their wave and watch them grow. But it's so cool. I mean, nobody else on the face of the planet are you going to meet that's half you. So there's 50% in them that you can connect with that is 100%, familiar. So for me, that's it. They're cool people, and I'm excited to get to spend time with them.
I guess it's interesting because it sounds like your parents and your elders and your family were, their music was really more bluegrass and gospel. Mm-hmm. You became more of a kind of, I would say kind of alt rocker, alt Americana, mm-hmm. Maybe garage rock, that kind of thing. But for your daughters, who knows what they'll do, if they'll do a totally different genre or, maybe something along their dad's line.
I would say the biggest modern influence that I have is probably, Ryan Adams.
I can see you're wearing a Ryan Adams t-shirt right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Heartbreaker re-release.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of times that's obviously where we kind of fall in line with the Widowmakers is a little more Ryan Adams and the Cardinals. It's kind of got that rock and roll thing going on. But that's not what I set out to be at all. That's what's so funny and so strange, how the musical journey can take you. Because I just wanted to be plucky singer-songwriter guy, And, you never know. You never know what you're going to get hooked up with and be a part of. And like I said, I'm proud to be with these guys, and I'm excited to release this album so people can hear what we've been up to and take it on the road.
So it sounds like with your kids, you are invested in their future. I know, right? Crazy. You're invested in their children's future. But you're invested in their future, especially when it comes to them and their music. Now, what do you hope happens in the next 10, 15 years with the West Virginia music scene for your kids to succeed and pursue something, assuming they want to go into music, pursue something that they'll enjoy and they'll get the most out of?
I would say that the thing that I would like to see personally for what's going on within our state is maybe just turning a little bit more inward and really recognizing the quality of what we have here. And taking those, because everybody, we all know, everybody wants to say they know so-and-so later, For us, me personally, and the group of folks that I grew up with in Logan, Landau,
Landau, Eugene Murphy, yeah. You mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody, all of a sudden, was Landau's best friend when he won, you know. And you watch that, and you go, most of us, if we didn't have an opportunity to have actually sang or done something with him, we'd all sit in the small crowds and watched him for years do what he did. Or, you know, in church, you know, he sang a lot of gospel music. He's got a lot of family that still do. And, you know, I played, you know, T-ball and crap like that with, you know, people that he grew up with. I would just like to say that I would like for people to recognize what they have before somebody else has to validate it. And get out there and support each other. Continue. Because you don't have to drive hours. You don't have to go to the big city to find what you're looking for. And the only way that our local people are going to be able to get their name out is if the people that love and care about them support them. And so take the time. Go pay $5 to listen to someone that one day, you know, could sweep the nation or even the world. Invest. It'll only do good things for everyone. Yeah. You know, you invest in your scene, that draws attention by if you want bigger acts to come in. You know, and then there you have it. You have your locals opening up for bigger acts, getting recognized. It really is a self-serving type of situation. You have to invest. And, you know, things like with, you know, Huntington Music and Arts Festival, with what Ian does in the last, I believe it was 7 years that he's done that. Mm-hmm. You know, Huntington obviously is where I kick around. But also here, with the opportunities we have to come and play.
In Charleston, you
mean?
In
Charleston, yeah, sorry.
It's okay.
Just supporting each other, even, I mean, it's less than an hour, you know. Get out there. We got Live on the Levee, you know, Mountain Stage that you guys do. There's so many opportunities to go out and see amazing music. So get out there, support. Quit complaining that there's nothing to do in West Virginia. And embrace your rootsy state. People drive for thousands of miles to come see us, and you're just sitting on your front porch complaining about nothing to do. So get out and embrace it.
So, Tim, what is next for you? What can people expect from you and the Widowmakers?
We actually we're booking shows right now. We've actually got two shows coming up, and actually one at Taylor Books coming up, full blend. It's actually going to be an unplugged show, which is going to be really cool because that's going to stretch my guys and be a little more of a homecoming for me. We are playing the Horse Traders EP release at the V Club coming up on June 10th. And love those guys. Love to have the opportunity to get on stage with them and have some fun. We are working on the actual release date for the album. We're supposed to be getting our final mixes hopefully this week. We've already got a guy we're working with out of Nashville for mastering.
Nice.
Who actually just mastered Jeff's album.
Oh, cool.
A guy named Alex McCullough. Worked with amazing people. He's worked with John Prine, Steve Earle. So
it's got a really good pedigree.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So really excited about that. So hopefully in the next coming weeks, we're hoping to the night of the Horse Traders show to actually announce a release date. So we'll keep you updated on that. But just regionally, working on gigs out at 35th Star with Fayetteville. Billy Matheny, or William Matheny, as he's known. We're going to be going up and hanging out with him and playing some gigs up in Morgantown. So just really have been concentrated on the album and now just trying to book shows in support of it.
So what is one thing that you want or you hope people walk away with from this interview?
Hopefully, I hope they walk away with a better understanding of what it's like to really be out there trying to scratch the surface of the music world that we all love so much. You know, in our lifetime, things have changed so much in the availability of music. And it seems like it's easier in a way that the opportunity exists maybe more so as an independent artist to get out there and get recognized. But at the same time, the wealth of artists that are now available. The one thing that hasn't adjusted with inflation throughout the years is the price of a song. You know, in the 1950s, it was $1 for a single. Now, you go to iTunes, it's still 99 cents. You know, go out there, support your people, buy their music, and just tell them good job.
Tim Browning and the Widowmakers' forthcoming release will be out later this fall. Hear more hashtag WV Music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And for more hashtag WV Music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/WV Music. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.